The next speaker will be from NATO, the Deputy Secretary General of NATO. And NATO has really, in the mindset, understood that cyber warfare is basically a part of the defense of the future. And that private sector is one of the major players, or if not the major player, in actually the innovation of technologies. You can say that, 50, 100 years ago, it was mainly the state that was putting money into technology development and really driving that development. Now it's really the private sector. And has it taken, therefore NATO has also taken great initiative to actually work with private sector exactly on innovation, on dual-use technologies and technologies in general. But also to have much more collaboration between EU and NATO and getting closer. And I think what has happened in Ukraine and lately, as I mentioned at the start of my speech, has really, it's getting close, right? We understand now how vulnerable societies are for these kind of threats, and when is enough enough? I mean, how hit does a society have to become before it's actually a provocation? It is not easy, but it is a part of the reality that we also face. So two major initiatives have been taken, and you'll hear much more about that. One called DIANA. So if you hear DIANA, it means Defense Innovation Accelerator for the North Atlantic. And it's really a cooperation on emerging technologies. And the other one is NIF, so NATO Innovation Fund, really investing in technology startups. So with that, I want to first of all thank for the collaboration. I have been appointed one of the advisors for NATO's EDTs, so Emerging and Disruptive Technologies. It's business people, academics, a group of 12 people who are advising the Deputy Secretary General and the Secretary General on how to move these EDTs forward and how to work amongst others with academia and private sector. The next speaker, our guest, is the Deputy Secretary General of NATO, Mircea Diarana. I hope that I pronounce it correctly. Please. Yeah. And maybe just to a few words on more on your achievements. Apart from the role that you carry today, I think we can say that you've been a driving force behind the transformation of NATO and the involvement in emerging technologies. You are former Romanian foreign minister and president of the Romanian Senate. And Romania, you're also the first deputy secretary general of the first countries that actually joined the alliance after the Cold War. So in many senses, you're first in everything in NATO and in terms of technologies. I thank you so much for the collaboration that we have had and still to come here today. Just to kick this session off, now the first question is, how does NATO really look at the technology innovation that happened in the last decade? And what has been the concrete actions? I mean, what are the steps you are taking concretely towards these changes?
First, Cecilia, thank you so much for having me. When I look to the MOD there, for me, it's a Minister of Defense. So let me bring also the other side of the moon. And thank you for having me. Thank you for the support you are giving to the Innovation Advisory Group in NATO. So I'm not only the first guy from the East coming to such a big position in NATO, but also something even funnier happened. The first day when I got the job, Jens Stoltenberg, our great Secretary General. You're the new guy. Okay. I have a job for you. I want you to be the innovation champion in NATO. And I have a little bit of political experience and diplomatic experience. I was ambassador in Washington. I founded the Aspen Institute in Romania. So a little bit of something I know. But when your boss tells you the first day you should be the champion of innovation in NATO, that was a little bit of a pleasant surprise. what do I do in NATO and what do we do in NATO? And I'd like to just briefly to tell you where we are. I'm also chairing the Innovation Board in NATO, which encompasses all the NATO enterprise. Our civilian colleagues, our military colleagues, our intel colleagues, our strategic commands. NATO has a dedicated strategic command based in Norfolk, Virginia, which is called Allied Command Transformation on New Technologies. We just recruited a formidable new CIO for NATO. And I'm also leading the cyber adaptation effort inside NATO. So how do we see this huge revolution that technologies are bringing to the world? Of course, from a security standpoint. And many of the things that were discussed and are discussed are about the huge advantages that technology brings to human society and to individuals. But we are in also the business to look also to the security implications of new technologies. First, on cyber, NATO has declared and adopted cyber as an operational domain for NATO in 2016 in Warsaw at the NATO summit. This means that for us, cyber is something that we look comprehensively, and as more interconnected and digitalized the world becomes, also more vulnerable it becomes. So the idea to have proper cyber defenses for institutions, for private companies, for NGOs, or for governments is something of paramount importance. And we take this very, very seriously. Then we also have a couple of more specialized things on cyber. We have in Mons, where is also the headquarters of our the other Supreme Allied Command, the operational side of NATO. We have a cyber operations center, which gives to our military leaders on-the-spot information about cyber threats all over the place. We also have in Tallinn a center of excellence on cyber, which is superbly well-equipped. And by the way, when Ursula von der Leyen and Jens Stoltenberg went together for the first time ever, President of the Commission, SecGen of NATO, going together in Lithuania and Latvia just a few weeks ago, the briefing they got, other than visiting the battle groups in the Baltics and doing the whole thing, they got, the two of them, they got a joint briefing from the NATO Center of Excellence in Tallinn on cyber, on the NATO Center of Excellence against Disinformation in Riga, and from the hybrid center in Helsinki, which is servicing both NATO and the EU. So the two leaders of the two important organizations of the Western world, if you want, they were briefed by this ecosystem of private sector and academia. A word about Ukraine. And Russia's and China's and Iran's and North Korea's, and also non-state actors like ransomware. In any scenario that we'll be witnessing in and around Ukraine, and in NATO, we are not taking away any of the options and scenarios that Russia might decide to take. Of course, we encourage dialogue. We have written to them to come back to the NATO-Russia Council. But on any scenario, cyber is a dominant feature in every single scenario, from the destabilization to critical infrastructures, to energy, to command and control, to public communication and disinformation. So in any scenario, from the relatively lighter one to the heaviest of them, cyber is a continuum of issues. So I just want to say in a nutshell that we take this very seriously. There was a mention here of fragmentation. And I, as a European, I'm also, I help my country, Romania, to get into NATO and the EU. So this is the greatest achievement of my professional and political careers. And I care about the EU. And I know that NATO-EU need to work even closer together. And the second job that SecGen Stoltenberg gave to me after being the champion of innovation said, I want you to make sure the NATO-EU, we function perfectly, which we do. And we are now preparing. I hope that we'll be ready pretty soon to the third joint declaration between NATO and the EU. And among the new things that we'll be doing together as organizations in a structured way, in a synergistic way, respectful of each other's realities and specificities, but together will be resilience, will be new technologies, will be climate change and security, and space, which is another dimension and the fifth operation domain in NATO. So what I'm just trying to say that we are exceptionally committed to making sure that the technological revolution that is bringing so much benefit to all of us also brings vulnerabilities, dangers, and malign actors of state or non-state nature are not shy in using these things against our way of life, against our democratic societies, against the freedom that we embrace in Europe and in NATO countries. And this is something that we take very seriously. So I don't know how successful I am in being the champion of innovation in NATO, but I try my best.
Yeah, I think you're very successful. Thank you. I'm working with you, and I really admire your energy that you're putting into this and the real life results. Less than, I think, right around 6 months ago, something called Diana went through the North Atlantic Council, and everybody agreed to actually give life to this accelerator. Can you explain a little bit more what is Diana, and why is it necessary for NATO to have something like Diana?
Listen, we all know, and you're the people that know this better than anyone else, that in, let's say, in the 80s or the 70s, roughly 80% of innovation was produced by governments. Internet, name it, moon, everything. Now the ratio has dramatically reversed. So now roughly 90% of everything which comes to innovation for defense and security, my job, MOD, my acronym, are coming from the private sector. So for NATO to make sure that we keep our technological edge, which is the underlying competitive factor in our competition with rival powers, because we are now back into an era of great power competition. And technological supremacy or dominance is the indispensable ingredient of success or failure. So in order to make sure that we harness the innovation ecosystems across the alliance, 30 nations, 1 billion people, 55% or more of global GDP is with NATO allies. So our job in NATO is to harness this issue. Also because we have a little bit of a concern, I can say this publicly with you, that we have a number of allies, and they are well known, that are advanced. They have a deep innovation ecosystem, deep financial and venture capital markets, deep pockets for universities, lots of resources and talent. But 30 nations are also smaller nations with smaller economies, with more fragile innovation ecosystem. So the role of Diana, Cecilia, is to make sure that we create the conditions for everyone in NATO ecosystem to be part of the same conversation, to make sure that the ingredient, the second ingredient after technological superiority, is interoperability. So I want to make sure that all allies, in case of need, will be able to defend each other and eventually fight together. So Diana is basically a collection of national assets by allied countries that put at the disposal of this across the Atlantic NATO ecosystem, test centers, accelerators, research entities, dual-use smart startups. So the idea is to make sure we create the preconditions for the whole NATO ecosystem to be part of this innovation process. And also for the companies at the entry level, especially for the smaller ones, we are also offering, together with the Innovation Fund in NATO, something which is quite important for startups, to lower the entry cost for those companies and to minimize the risk. Of course, innovation means risk, but this accelerator, so we offer to companies, and this is an open invitation for companies that have bright ideas for dual use technologies to use the fact that NATO is putting a disposal of these companies. So free of charge, sandboxes for your ideas. And if we find merit, we put a little bit of money. The innovation fund will not be huge. You're not competing with venture capital markets, not even with the more patient venture capital firms. But this will be a sort of a seal of approval from NATO. So once you have a seal of approval of NATO, it means that the idea is valid. And then that company can go to their private equity markets and financial and other ecosystems and grow. And why not become the unicorns? So that's in essence, Diana and Innovation Fund is an aggregator of what we do, a facilitator of what we do, and a medium for interoperability and acceleration for success, for especially for the startup or medium-sized companies. Of course, we work with the big tech giants. We work with Sweden and Finland very closely. I just got a briefing from an Australian company working with quantum and cybersecurity, because the pace of transformation is so intense. And this is something that we also work not only with NATO countries, but also with like-minded nations, including in the Asia Pacific, including with Sweden and Finland, with Israel, with other countries that have high potential.
So NATO has been sometimes criticized to be a little bit slow and it's hard to make a contract. So this accelerator, is it going to accelerate also the access for doing contracts with NATO by entering this kind of ecosystem? And if you find them to be useful, then they have an easier way in to actually interact with NATO.
I'm not saying it's easy. Big bureaucracies are not famous for their agility. This is true also for us. But we know that speaking of technological edge, we just cannot afford not to try to do a better job. This is what we do. We have our industry days in NATO, working with industry, trying to find on both sides the kind of understanding of our needs that are specific to requirements that private sector, because we work with private sector. So I think we are making progress. It's a constant area of interest for myself and our teams. And I also encourage the ones who would like to have more of information about this to talk to our new CIO. We recruited him from the private sector. He didn't spend one day in any bureaucracy, governmental or non-governmental. We are very happy with him, with Manfred. We also have a specialized agency called the NCIA. NATO is our technology service provider. We have more than 3,000 people working on cyber every day in NCIA in NATO. And we have the Allied Command Transformation in Norfolk that I referred to, which is our military thing. So across this ecosystem, we are trying to do a better job. But we depend on private sector. And this is good in a way, because sometimes the best practices from the private sector could be useful for big bureaucracies and even for governments. And the last point I would like to make, we are not sitting in a vacuum in NATO. We are also taking the lessons learned from national governments on cyber adaptation, on resilience. Look now at Germany. They have Germany 2.0 on cyber. Look at the Build Back Better of President Biden's. That's $1.6 billion for IT and critical infrastructure and broadband. So NATO is a superb organization, not only because we are the most successful alliance in human history, but also because we benefit from an ecosystem of smart people, always creative, always dynamic, never taking a no for an answer. And that's something that we try to emulate also inside our big organization in NATO.
So it said that I said in the start of this event, I said the future belongs to the ones who prepare for it. Is NATO prepared? Will you be ready? And now we see cyber attacks. We see that this is coming closer, the cyber threats. Will you be ready? Will you be able to be so agile that you can collaborate with the private sector, that EU and NATO can actually collaborate on innovation? So will you be ready?
We will. We will, and I tell you why we will. Is that we have in the DNA of NATO from our very inception, 72 years ago, a permanent gene of permanent adaptation to a changing security environment. And of course, we adapted a lot over the decades. But now, I think for us, as Europe and transatlantic community, we have the first time, not only in decades, but in half a millennia, formidable challenges to our technological and industrial dominance. For the first time, we have peer competitors. And Russia is one of them, and many times creating difficulties, but they don't have the depth and the discipline and the resources that, like, say, like China does possess. So we take these issues very seriously because we are, in a way, it's part of our job. And as technology evolves, also the challenges to our security become more complex. But we are making progress and we are up to the job. To be honest, the discussion on new emerging disruptive technologies, EDTs, in NATO started only in 2019. It was before. And we decided to have specialized sub-strategies for AI and big data on quantum, on biotech, on space, on human enhancement, and of course, hypersonics, the latest generation of, from the seven, there are more. We also have a chief scientist organization in NATO. That's an organization that have more than 5,000 smart and superb engineers and researchers all over the world. So now we have the first AI strategy adopted in NATO. I encourage you to have a look. And we're very proud that we also won, we are one of the first organizations to put moral and ethical components to AI and big data exploitation. Because especially from the defense sector and security sector, we might see the temptation of some players to abuse of these technologies. So the long answer is that we understand the importance of this. And I know that like we have done in the past, we'll be able to be up to this challenge, which is probably the most complex and the more sophisticated we had in half a millennia. And this is something that's why we need NATO and EU together. That's why we NATO, EU and other like-minded nations around the world together, because this will be a formidable challenge for all of us.
Well, I want to thank you for coming here and sharing a vision. And I find comfort in you, actually. I know that you're going to continue in NATO quite a while, and I'm looking very much forward to continue our collaboration. And I think it's also an invitation to private sector to share your innovations and to not least for a fact, something that was maybe not taken for given, I think even 2-3 years ago, that NATO and the EU is getting closer in many ways, and technologies are not only bringing people together, they are apparently also bringing institutions together. Thank you so much for this excellent speech. And can we give a hand, please? Thank you so much. Thank you.